Earlier this year, President Obama sat in front of a room full of reporters and presented his final budget.
The budget that we're releasing today reflects my priorities and the priorities that I believe will help advance security and prosperity in America for many years to come. These are proposals reflected in the budget that work for us and not against us.
Hi guys, it's me, Camille.
And me, Tim. So there's lots of stuff in the president's budget. Defense, energy, roads, that kind of thing.
But there is something tucked inside the sprawling 170-page document that stood out to us.
Yeah, in the middle of page 35, to be exact, is this new education initiative called Stronger Together.
So, Tim, you've done a lot of education coverage. When you first saw that, what do you think it stood for?
Yeah, well, you know, at first I was like, well, there's always talk about bringing stuff together in education. So, you know, maybe it's money for, I don't know, the seamless integration of Common Core and state-based standards, something like that.
Nope.
Yeah. Or then I thought, well, maybe it's something about merging K-12 and university coursework. That would make sense.
Nope. Mm.
All right. So then I thought, well, you know, maybe it's some kind of hybrid digital learning environment for the future, like a synergy type, you know, synergy.
Yeah.
No.
You didn't know.
I had no idea.
You didn't know. Well, as it turns out, it's actually a $120 million grant to advance school integration.
And at first, I mean, we found this out and we were like, really?
I know. I mean, it's like we stepped into a time warp. Here we are in 2016 and the president of the United States wants to use the federal government to incentivize school integration.
But the more we thought about it, the more it made sense why this would be a national priority.
Because despite the decades-long fight for school desegregation, America is, for the most part, still sending its white and black children to separate schools. And here's the thing. In St. Louis, this angst over school segregation and integration never really went away.
In fact, St. Louis is home to the largest and longest-running formal desegregation program in the country. So, as the nation once again takes a fresh look at an old problem, we do the same.
On this episode, the story of how St. Louis is still trying to integrate schools. We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems and the people they touch.
I'm Camille Stanley.
And I'm Tim Lloyd. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Every day, twice a day, Anitra Mahari makes her way to Wydown Middle School. Her 12-year-old son, Bryson, is a 7th grader there.
Here he is.
Wydown is located in the Clayton School District, considered to be one of the best in St. Louis.
Bryson's early today.
Yeah.
He's usually always late. And he's got a book in his hand. The one thing about my kid is, you know, some kids you have to yell at them, put the game down. He's always got a book. His head's plastered in a book. He will walk reading a book. He's always reading books.
Anitra makes this daily trip to drop off and pick up her son, even though the family lives just a few miles away in the city of St. Louis. And Bryson could maybe take the bus, but Anitra doesn't go for that.
If he had to ride the school bus, there's a possibility that he would have to wake up really, really early just to get to school on time, even though we live this close. I think that structure and family time is very important for my husband and I as parents. So what I mean by that is I pick him up, we also drop his friend off at home. We drop his friend off, we come home, he works on his homework. Once he's done with his homework, he does his chores and we can spend time together as a family. Me picking him up from school allows for that.
Now, at this point, we won't blame you if you're thinking, so what? What's so special about a parent shuttling their kid to school?
Yeah, my mom gave me plenty of rides to and from school. No big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. But in this case, there's another thing that motivates Anitra to play chauffeur.
Like her son now, Anitra was enrolled in St. Louis's voluntary desegregation program in the 1980s, and she does not have fond memories of being bused from her North St. Louis city home to attend school in the Hazelwood School District in St. Louis County.
To get from my house to my school was about 20-30 minute ride. And, you know, at the risk of sounding like some spoiled child, which I wasn't, but my bus stop was probably 4, if not 5 blocks away from the house. So on days like this, if whether it's freezing cold or burning hot or whatever, we still had to walk to get to the bus stop. We still had to wake up super early just to get there on time. And by the time we got to school, if you didn't, you know, at least have a decent meal in your tummy, you got to school and you already had this disadvantage.
But her family didn't see it that way. Back in the living room of her stately two-story brick home, Anitra tells us why her mom sent her on those long bus rides every day.
I always did well academically, always made the honor roll. I remember in fourth grade, I had a teacher reach out to my mom and say, you know, the desegregation program is available. I think you need to consider putting her in it because I think she needs to be challenged more. And I remember listening to my mom have this conversation with my teacher thinking, what does he mean by challenge more? You know, because as a kid, you know, you'd like to think everything's fair. But the reality is that things were different. So once I entered into the county schools, Hazelwood School District, I remember when I started, I had to work a little bit harder than I did in the city schools.
Anitra says focusing on her grades gave her a sense of control as she navigated the social and cultural changes that came with being one of only a handful of black students in what was at the time a mostly white school.
She did well, got good grades, and didn't really think about being in the DSEG program all that much. Then came middle school.
I'd made friends with kids that were not of the same race as me, and if I'd stay behind school and I'd see their parents come pick them up and, you know, all these fancy cars, and I would listen to all these things that they were, you know, doing after school. And I realized, okay, so now I have to go get back on this bus and go back home. And my community was completely different from what they had. That's when I started to identify with the separation.
Now that her son Bryson is in middle school, Anitra says she sees him wrestling with those same issues.
And I heard this myself when I tagged along with him one day after school. It's a little hard to make out, but Bryson asked his mom why there's a DSEG program in the first place.
So why do they have the VIC program? Just wondering.
The VIC program is put in place so that kids that live in the city can get a fair shot at a quality education like the kids that don't live in the city.
Aren't there good schools in the city also?
Yes and no. There are good schools in the city, and a lot of schools are, you know, redeveloping, so to speak, but the ones that are cost lots of money that you can really get a good education at. And this goes back to when I was telling you earlier that when we put him in, well, when we decided to let him go to the Clayton School District, we just kind of let him go in and be a child, because I still think that it's important for a child to be a child. You don't inundate them with all this political stuff that will get in the way of their God-given right to just learn as children. So now that he's older, all of these things seem new to him, you know? Like, well, why? But as he becomes older, the one thing is, and it's unfortunate, and I hate to say this, but it's the truth, is we essentially are teaching our son that there is a certain thing called white privilege, and he wasn't born with it.
And also what I really don't get is why people would dislike a person because of the color of their organ, aka skin, because it's just like everyone is a person. All people are people because people are people, yes.
Do you feel like you've experienced any of that? Like anyone's like treated you a certain way because of your skin?
Possibly, but I probably didn't realize it. I don't know.
Anitra says she knew her son would probably have to go through the same cultural gymnastics as she did when she was sent to a majority white school.
But like her own mother and thousands of others, she decided it was worth it for his future. sentiment Anitra mentioned about wanting your kid to go to the best possible school is probably something every parent can relate to.
And it's also at the heart of nearly every fight this country has had over school integration, starting in 1954 with the Supreme Court's landmark ruling in Brown versus Board of Education.
The decision was based on this idea that black children felt inferior by being segregated.
Dana Thompson Dorsey is a professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and she researches how education policies affect marginalized students. She says it took a while for the Brown case to trickle down into action.
When the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964, that's when you saw the most amount of school desegregation occurring, because that particular act gave enforcement powers to the Department of Education to send out deseg orders and place them on school districts and universities across the country.
And most deseg programs, including the current one in St. Louis, followed the same template.
Black families were bused to suburban schools, which were almost always white and had more money. At the same time, suburban families were enticed to send their children into special magnet schools in mostly black districts.
And at least from a number standpoint, it worked. More black and white children started going to school together.
In fact, around the late 80s, around 1988, is probably when you saw the highest number of black students and students of color going to school with white students.
St. Louis followed that trend, though it only set up its program after a judge threatened to take away local control and merge everyone into one giant city-county school district.
Still, during the 1980s, the court-supervised desegregation program here swelled as thousands of black families signed their children up to attend majority white suburban schools. But for many black students, integration came with a cost that can't be seen in the numbers.
I definitely felt like a guinea pig, an experiment.
This is Darlene Donegan. These days, she teaches social studies at the Alternative High School in University City.
But back in the late 1980s, she was a nervous teenager going to a new high school far away from her home in North St. Louis.
And I went from 10th grade through 12th grade in the Lindbergh School District, which was a very interesting experience.
Like Bryson's mom, Anitra, she also doesn't have good memories of those long bus rides. And Darlene says when she got to school, she felt like an outsider.
So that time, Michael Jackson Thriller album was very popular. One girl said, because the Beat It video was out, is your neighborhood like that? Is there people walking around with chains down the street? No, we have a regular street just like your street. Nobody has chains walking up and down the street.
Darlene says the problems weren't just with her classmates. She says many teachers had lower expectations for the black transfer students. For instance, here's a story about her math teacher.
If I raised my hand, he would kind of just like, just give me some random answer and pretty much, if you just do your work and come to class, you're going to pass. So it really...
Well, what did that mean to you when he said that?
That was insulting to me because I didn't just expect to pass. Like, my family really valued education, and I didn't understand, like, what did I do to even, because I came to class, I brought my materials, I came on time, I did the work, but I had questions, but to just kind of dismiss me was heartbreaking because there was no reason.
We're talking about what's happening in the classroom, but what about extracurriculars? I mean, were you able to participate?
No, absolutely not. Even if your activity was 30 minutes and school ended at, let's say, 3 and you were finished by 4, I would have to wait till 6 o'clock to get that bus to go home. So I might not get home till like 7 or 7:30. Buses were owned by the district, so they would have to do all the other schools first. And then when they're finished doing the middle school and the high school in the community, then the bus will come back and then they'll pick up the
So just to make sure I have the activity bus, the idea of it right, is that it would take all the other kids, almost all of whom are white,
right,
back into home after doing activities, and then they would come and grab
the DSEG students and then drop them off in their communities.
So while Darlene is experiencing all this, racial tensions at her school over the DSEG program were building.
There was rumors, that the kids were going to walk out because of the D6 students. And I went to school And the first period was normal. And then I went to the bathroom, maybe the second period. Then there was a sign on the wall saying, in the bathroom, like, porch monkeys, go home. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, I told my teacher. And then we heard right before lunch, so somewhere in the middle, like, a whole group of kids walked out. They were marching up Lindbergh. And with signs and stuff about ending the program or sending the DSEG kids back home.
Darlene's principal at Lindbergh High School actually praised the white students. When asked about the protests, he told the Associated Press, quote, it was well done and orchestrated. Then, 2 years later, the district surveyed its own residents.
The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported virtually no one wrote a positive comment on the DSEG program.
We're talking about the students in the desegregation program, but what about the students who weren't?
It was a great idea that was turned into a nightmare.
Drew Brown is standing in front of Roosevelt High School in South St. Louis. He graduated from here in 1989, the same year that survey in Lindbergh was released.
Drew says his dad believed the transfer program robbed city schools, which were mostly black, of resources, the best students, and lots of engaged parents.
Once the kids in the neighborhood started moving, you'd have neighbors, and one kid would be still in the city schools and one kid would get into the transfer program, and that it would kind of kill the dynamic in the neighborhood, because the kids that got into the transfer program, they got all of the resources with those schools, and they kind of looked down on the kids who didn't get into it, so it created tension in the neighborhood.
Coming up, we get a history lesson on America's long journey to desegregate its public schools. After a decade of desegregation, the American legal landscape starts to shift. Dana, the UNC professor, gave us a little history lesson.
She says in the early 90s, the courts essentially watered down diversity benchmarks used to evaluate whether DSEG programs were working.
There were six of these measures, and they included things like student assignment, faculty, and extracurricular activities.
The courts basically said, well, school districts don't necessarily have to meet all six factors, at least if they're trying to meet most of them. We will release them from court orders and relinquish, you know, control back to the school districts.
And Dana says school districts across the country were eager to regain that control. Many sought to modify or eliminate their desegregation programs.
In St. Louis, there was pressure to scale back from both white and black leaders. Some argued the program cost too much. Others worried about the, quote, brain drain to the city schools.
Right, which is kind of like what Drew, whose family didn't put him in the DSEG program, was talking about.
Right. So in 1999, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon was Attorney General, and in that role, he brokered a deal to phase out St. Louis's DSEG program.
Under the agreement, student body diversity targets would be lowered, and gradually, new students would stop being accepted.
The program's governing body was rebranded as the Nonprofit Voluntary Interdistrict Choice Corporation, or VIC program for short.
And then, in 2007, Dana says there was another major court decision.
Parents Involved is a short name of the case, but it involved two school districts, one out of Louisville, Kentucky, the other out of Seattle, Washington, which basically made it so that race can't really be considered any longer. So where we saw school resegregation occurring in the late 90s into the early 2000s, you really see it more so now after that 2007 case, because school districts, even those that are trying to act in good faith for those that were under DSEG orders and even those that were never under DSEG orders, but that just truly want to see schools that are racially desegregated or integrated, can no longer consider race in those decisions.
So that was the past. And for now, St. Louis is able to still use race in its VIC program because of the settlement and the fact that districts participate voluntarily. But let's talk about the future. Because for the new wave of school integration efforts, the rules have changed.
They can't say race anymore. So districts have come up with a workaround. They say socioeconomics, which can often be code for race. For example, President Obama's proposal to integrate schools puts the emphasis on economic diversity, not racial diversity.
And it turns out that a growing number of schools in America are already thinking about this. The Century Foundation, a nonpartisan and nonprofit think tank, counted 91 districts and charter networks across the country that use socioeconomic status as a factor in student assignment. And that's double the number they found in 2007, the same year the Supreme Court ruled that race could not be used as a factor in student placement.
But those 91 districts are just a drop in the bucket when you think about America's vast educational landscape.
And many observers, including Dana, say when you're talking about the future of school integration, it really comes down to
parents to help make decisions, because it's parents who are the voters. And they can always make their needs known by who they vote for and what they demand from their politicians. And parents who also make the choices in terms of their school choice options. So it actually comes down to us more so than anything.
In other words, it comes down to the attitudes of white parents.
Because they still have the power, which takes us to the home of Paul and Angelie Brockmeyer.
It's dinner time, and the Brockmeyers' three children are running around the first floor of their late 19th century Victorian in Compton Heights.
Can you make it from all the way back over there?
Yeah. Abe is running around playing basketball. He's 5. Nico is running around being a monster. She's 4. And Daisy is enjoying her snack. She's 3.
Great. And remind me again how long you've been in this house?
We have been here for 6 years. We moved here when Abe was 1 month old, and he's coming up on being 6.
Paul and Angelie grew up in small towns and went to mostly all-white schools. They both say they had good experiences growing up, but wanted something different for their kids.
It was more so just to get a whole lot more diversity. Paul and I really value that. And we were really hoping for a diverse experience for the kids, and we have it in our neighborhood with our neighbors where we play and shop, and in the schools that we were able to choose for them.
Like a lot of parents who've decided to brush off suburban living in favor of the city, figuring out what school is best for their kids is top of mind.
So a year and a half ago, the Brockmeyers set up a website, stlcityschools.org, to help parents in St. Louis choose from the growing list of charter, magnet, private, and neighborhood school options. In the first couple of months, with no real promotion, the site had thousands of visitors.
For the Brockmeyers, they picked a magnet school near the Central West End for their two oldest children, Abe and Nico. More than 80% of students at that school are Black. Paul says a lot of parents they talk to are putting racial diversity on their list of priorities when choosing a school.
Everybody wants to factor it in, and they factor it in some amount, but it's hard to say like where it falls in the priorities. People sit down and they're weighing all these things, and that one it's sort of more nebulous. It's like, well, we want that, but you know, how much is that really gonna, you know, is that gonna give our kids a real advantage or not? It's hard
Daddy.
To tell. So that sometimes falls to the bottom of the list.
This is a question that researchers at the Fordham Institute tried to answer a couple years ago. They asked parents to list what they would prioritize if building a school from the ground up. And at the top of this list, regardless of socioeconomics or race, was academics.
So no surprise there.
No.
But as for diversity, that's near the bottom of the list, although slightly higher for Black parents. When we talked to the head researcher for the survey, she says that attitude has been consistent since the 1990s.
So far, more than 60,000 students have taken part in St. Louis's DSEG program. And according to state data, they generally did better academically than Black children who stayed in the city.
But the region and its schools are still really, really segregated along racial and economic lines.
So when we sat down with David Glaser, who currently runs the program these days, we both had the same big question at the top of our notebooks. Was this worth it?
I guess what I would say is, you know, the program certainly accomplished some positive things and did help contribute to integrating schools over time. But it's a tough issue. You know, we're still, as you stated, you know, we're still pretty segregated as a community. I mean, every year, you know, some national organization comes up with a list of the 10 most segregated cities in the nation, and usually, unfortunately, St. Louis makes the top 10.
And there's research that shows this level of segregation in the classroom is not good for students of any color in St. Louis or anywhere else in the country. The Century Foundation, for example, says children do better when they are exposed to kids who aren't like them. And Dana says everybody has a stake in this, both locally and nationally.
If we are going to maintain our reputation as a superpower, the best, the first at everything, then we have to educate our entire student population, our youth that are coming into this world today, and they are mainly of color. And research tells us that Black students, Latino students, or students of color, and white students do better academically when they're in school together. So I think that should be what our goal is, that they go to school together and receive the best education together.
But it's an open question whether St. Louis's VIC program will be able to keep working toward that goal. It's slowly and quietly winding down. A quarter of the original 16 districts that signed on to the DSEG settlement no longer participate. Lindbergh, where Darlene went to school and where white students protested the desegregation program back in 1987, stopped accepting new VIC students 5 years ago.
And the number of transfer students in the entire DSEG program has dwindled to about 4,500, a fraction of what enrollment was in 1999, when there were more than 14,000 students.
And yet the demand hasn't faded among Black families.
Glazer told us that in round numbers, there are about 7 times as many applications as spaces available each year.
But remember, the settlement provides that the VIC program will end.
Currently, officials have said they will stop accepting new students after 2018, though Glazer says he's hopeful suburban districts will agree to at least one more voluntary extension. Okay, you guys know the deal. If you like this podcast, share it with your friends and your family and your boss and everybody else in your life. And also go to iTunes, subscribe, and we love the reviews.
Right, the 5-star reviews especially. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just 5 stars for us. Also, if you dig Twitter, you can find us at WeLiveHereSTL. Tell us what you'd like us to do more of, less of. Yeah, find
share
us on
your ideas with
yeah,
us.
Share your ideas, exactly. That's the big thing. And we'll share back with you the things we're reading and all kinds of other updates. Again, our Twitter handle is at WeLiveHereSTL. So our theme music is produced by Cassie Morgan.
And our editor is Shula Newman.
From St. Louis Public Radio, I'm Tim Lloyd.
And I'm Camille Stanley.
This is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.